The Fortnight of Freedom is a two-week period from June the 21st until July the 4th. It's a two-week period of prayer, reflection, and really concentration on religious liberty, on what religious liberty is, why it is important, how it is being threatened, and what we ought to be doing as citizens and believers to defend our first and most cherished of freedom. This period includes the feast days of St. Thomas More and St. John Fisher, great heroes of religious freedom in the history of our church. We also have various signature events in the Fortnight for Freedom. One is the opening Mass on the 21st at 7 p.m. here at the Basilica of the Assumption in Baltimore, which is our nation's first cathedral, and then the closing Mass at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Washington on July the 4th. In between, there will be many, many observances in dioceses across the country.
And Archbishop, you mentioned specifically this is an opportunity for citizens and believers, for all of us as citizens and believers, to take part in these events. What is the role of believers in a modern, non-religious, even a secular state?
Our role in any given culture or any given country is to be what the gospel says. We are to be salt. We are to be light. We are to be a leaven. And we are to be working from within our culture to create what successive popes have called a civilization of justice and love and truth. And it just seems to me that defending religious liberty is one of the very, very important ways we defend and uphold human dignity, the first pillar of the church's social teaching. And it's also a recognition, a clear-headed recognition, that our freedoms are linked. The right to life, the right to free speech, all of these things are grounded in our fundamental relationship, namely our relationship with our Creator, and the recognition of the state that relationship ought to be unfettered, that people ought to have the freedom to respond in love to their God and to practice their faith not only in their minds and hearts, not only in the privacy of their homes, but in their daily work, to be able to speak out in the public square, and to be able to contribute to shaping a culture where religious freedom and human dignity are respected.
And Archbishop, along those lines, this year is the second year that we're observing the Fortnight for Freedom. Why are we doing this again? You know, the first year had some very obvious challenges to religious liberty that were being addressed. Are there still challenges out there? And what is the purpose of this second observance?
The challenges to religious freedom have developed over time. There has been a gradual erosion of religious freedom on many levels. First of all, cultural, as fewer people practice their faith or as their practice of the faith grows cold, their understanding and their dedication to preserving religious liberty tends to wane. That also opens the door for laws and judicial decisions and administrative decisions on the part of government at the federal and state level, which tend to undermine or delimit religious liberty. It's a sort of a sense that it's been gradually diminished over time. Now, things emerge on the cultural landscape now and again that are sort of a wake-up call. One of these would be the Health and Human Services mandate, which is scheduled to go into effect on August 1st of this year, which would involve at least some religious institutions in facilitating and maybe even funding prescribed services that would include contraception, abortion-inducing drugs like Ella, sterilization, and what has also been little noticed, counseling available to the minor children of our employees that would certainly not be in accord with our teaching on sexuality and family. And so that would be one of them, but there's many others. Pretty soon, we'll be getting a ruling from the Supreme Court on the Defense of Marriage Act, on its constitutionality, and on the legitimacy of Proposition 8 in California, which overturned the legalization of same-sex marriage in that state. We don't know whether the Supreme Court will rule broadly or narrowly, but what we do know is that marriage is under assault. In state after state, it's being redefined. And this has huge religious liberty implications for things like the licensing of our adoption and healthcare agencies, hiring and benefits, the curriculum that might be imposed upon us by the state, either in our public schools or even in Catholic schools under the guise of anti-bullying bills. And so there are multiple threats to religious liberty. Many of them are operating a little bit below the surface. Many people don't realize these threats are out there because churches are open. Right now, our institutions are all functioning. No one's gone to jail yet. And so people might have a hard time seeing that there are threats to religious liberty. The Fortnight is an effort to raise this up so that people's consciousness has been alerted to these threats to religious liberty, and so that their mind, heart, and spirit are alerted to the tremendous good that the religious community is doing in our culture when it is allowed to operate freely.
Excellent. Thank you, Archbishop. And one final question then, actually a double question. What can people do to take part in the Fortnight for Freedom? And then more long-term, what kind of outcomes are you looking for as a result of this effort to raise people's awareness?
Let me begin with the second question first. We are really at the outset of a movement. We're not just here to fix this problem or that problem. We are really at the outset of a movement that includes other religious faiths and communities and a lot of other people of goodwill to really make sure that religious freedom does not disappear from this country. And it's also a movement that keeps a very keen eye out for those who suffer religious persecution around the world. It's a recognition that any country that is free needs to keep that flame burning brightly. And that requires long, hard, patient work. Efforts like the Fortnight for Freedom are really efforts to really begin building awareness among church-going Catholics, among those who are maybe at the margins of the church, to begin understanding this and sort of bringing people into this effort. So the Fortnight may not produce a piece of legislation. It may not produce something immediately tangible, but if year by year we are getting people to think about and pray about religious liberty, I think we are succeeding. A little bit like the pro-life movement. It's taken years to build the pro-life movement to the robust reality that it is. Same thing here. Now, how do you participate? Well, first of all, I think we can all pray. We can all, in the privacy of our home, the privacy of our hearts, pray for religious freedom, for its preservation and its restoration. Secondly, we can participate in events that will be organized in dioceses around the country. Many bishops will be having masses. Some will be having rallies. Some will be having discussion and study groups and forums. Thirdly, everybody can read and study about religious liberty. Again, the bishops have produced a wonderful document called Our First and Most Cherished Freedom. It's kind of a compendium, a summary of the church's teaching on religious liberty. In this year of faith, when we're celebrating and observing the anniversary of the Second Vatican Council, what a great opportunity to sit down with a Declaration on Religious Freedom, Dignitatis Humanae, and to read and study it. It's a very accessible document, and that's a great thing to do. We will also be encouraging some action. For example, there is a Rights of Conscience Act pending before the House of Representatives. We will certainly be urging people of goodwill, and particularly Catholics, to urge their representatives in Congress to get behind that bill. So these are some of the ways. And finally, let me mention again the opening event in Baltimore, 7 p.m., the opening Mass at the Basilica of the Assumption, and of course the closing Mass at the National Shrine in Washington. People are welcome from all over the country, indeed all over the world. These are national shrines. These are places of great devotion, and these are places at the heart of the American experiment of limited government. And so we certainly warmly invite people to come to these events.